This is another episode of the Blossom Podcast, your number one source for everything bariatric surgery, from pre-op to post-op. Registered dietitian Alex Conception gives you real, raw tips and motivation through your journey. This is the Blossom Podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Blossom Podcast, sponsored by The Right Life. I am your host, registered dietitian Alex Conception. We are here with Catherine Kyle. You have already met her, and we are very proud to have this guest today. She is a past patient success story. And Catherine, would you please give an introduction?
I would love to. The guest today is Fiona. She's actually a past patient of ours. I'll let her drop her stats, but I love this woman. She has been so amazing to watch blossom and grow, and I witness it every single day on her Instagram, which is Never Say Never Fiona, and you really got to follow her because she's so real, she's so honest, and I'm just so excited to dig in with her and see what has made her so successful and give you guys some tips and hints along the way. I'm stoked.
Likewise. I've been watching her journey from the beginning, and it is just amazing to see her now, how far she's come, and again, just giving you guys the raw tips and how you can be successful and what her struggles were. So Fiona, what's going on?
Hi guys, I absolutely love that intro. Can you just follow me around and every time I enter a room, just start out with that energy? I'm kind of loving that. Yeah. You mentioned stats. I guess I'll just kind of jump right in. So my highest weight on record that I saw was 375. I'm pretty sure I was bigger because the first time I tried to weigh myself, the scale just went to max and stopped, and wow. I actually waited and bought another one, and that's when I found out I was 375.
So before you get into that, how tall are you? Because people can't see this.
Oh yeah, I'm 5'5".
Okay, 5'5", 375. All right, continue. Sorry about that.
No, it's okay. And then I on my own in my journey, the lowest I got on my own was about 220. Okay. Give or take, that was with keto and going to a gym 6 days a week. I had a trainer 3 days a week for an hour at each time.
Wow. Yeah.
And yeah, I lived, ate, breathed. If absolutely that, I made it kind of my top priority. But then life got in the way, finances got in the way. First went the trainer, then went the gym, and then went keto because it's not cheap. As anybody who tries to eat, if everybody's listening, this has probably tried a diet in their life. They know it's never cheap, no matter how you try. And I regained in a year from about 225 to, I woke up and was about 298 again. Oh, wow. And it broke my heart. And I just realized I didn't want to go through that year and a half journey again. It was an amazing year and a half. I'm glad I did it. It has nothing to do with my trainer or the gym that I went to or even keto. It's just, I didn't want to have to go back to that level again and try to do that. And ironically, my specialist for my fibromyalgia pain had been not so subtly mentioning that losing the weight would help some of those issues and kind of was pretty blatant with it and said, you know, if you don't consider this, I might have to fuse. I have a couple spots in my spine that have some issues. And he threatened that he might fuse my spine by 40 because the pressure I was putting on my back was basically like having a 600-pound man stand on it all day long.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. So it was really life-threatening. Your weight has gotten to that point.
At 5'5 and 300 pounds, I was back putting pressure on my knees and joints again. And I had gotten low enough before to know these new signs, to recognize it before. Before, I'd always been so big, I always hurt like that. So for it to go away and then come back, I knew it was me. And also my health in other areas, I was high normal in all of these other areas. I wasn't officially sick yet, but my primary care doctor was telling me that by 40, I was going to face the consequences of 30 years of obesity.
Wow. How old are you right now?
I'm 33 now.
33, and how long ago was this news?
I would have been 31, and they told me they'd fuse my spine by my late 30s. And they told me that I would probably, at that point, my PCP was warning me to be prepared for diabetes and high blood pressure by my early 40s.
Of course.
Wow. And I saw, we've been trying for kids off and on and things like that. And I was told that in my 300s, especially when I was 375, that my weight made pregnancy so risky, they actually didn't recommend it without weight loss.
Very common, yeah.
So
yeah.
For those who don't know, what is fibromyalgia?
It is a chronic inflammation pain disease that they don't really know the roots of. For me, they think it's rooted in, I have also PTSD. And there's honestly been a lot of links to that. Basically, they think that because of the trauma of my life, of past things, my body is constantly in a mode where it thinks it's fighting something.
It's like a physical reaction. Wow.
It's chosen to fight itself. So it sends a lot of inflammation into my muscle tissues and my nerves in my back. I lose sensation. I lose mobility. I get a lot of swelling. I get loss of range of motion. One of my worst ones, I was so swollen I couldn't move my hands or turn my head correctly.
Wow. So you were in constant pain.
Absolutely.
All the time. And how is the weight loss now affected that pain level?
I won't lie, the fibromyalgia still flares. At least once a month, it's a painful day and I'm not getting much done for the day. In comparison though, my daily levels are almost zero. So it's kind of, I've traded the daily pain for kind of a once a month flare. Usually it's triggered when I push myself too hard physically. I start to slip on my diet, eat foods that trigger it. Or if there's a lot of stress and things in my emotional health, it'll kind of sometimes spill over. I don't want to make it sound like it's not real, because for a lot of fibromyalgia people, it's not just mental health, but it is for me kind of connected. So in all, I absolutely, if I had known it was going to take my pain levels this low to get under 200 pounds, I would have done the surgery 3-4 years ago.
Yeah. So tell us now, where are you at as far as your current weight?
Actually, ironically, today I had a doctor's appointment, so I am 143.
Hey, incredible. That is awesome.
Yeah, I have a scale that does body fat and things. Of course, those aren't the most reliable, and my doctor doesn't offer it, but I'm hoping when the gym opens, they'll kind of let me know, because we all know with the skin and with body fat, that kind of changes what the scale says. So, I'm hoping to get a clearer reading of that, because as we'll probably talk about later, skin and body dysmorphia are something that I think people don't really want to talk too much about because it scares them. And it is difficult and it can be scary, but it absolutely isn't. It's worth it. I mean, knowing what I know now, I'd still go back and high five myself and tell me to get it done.
Yeah, absolutely. Good, good. Well, congratulations so far on everything, being able to really take control of your life, your health, even the pain, and then obviously now being not at risk for diabetes and all the other comorbidities and things like that associated with weight.
And that's something that I like about your social media, is that you are so transparent and you show people the struggles of not only the weight loss, but how it affects your mentality as well. And obviously, if you jump on your page now, you look at your stories or your feed, you can see where you're at now. But take us back to what brought you to Blossom and that whole experience of even considering weight loss surgery. How long did it take you to decide that, and what brought you up essentially to Blossom?
So a big part is it took me, I think I had researched probably a good 6 to 8 months before I reached out to Blossom. And then by the time I reached out to Blossom, I did a lot of research on what life after surgery was going to be. So the first part, I just researched surgery and what it was, what the options were, what the statistics were. I mean, if I'm going to give up or move my organs, this better be worth it. And I also knew that I have family members and friends who've had it done. So they all told me I needed to know what I was in for and be prepared to change it, because if I didn't, I was going to fail. And I actually got best advice from the three, I don't want to call them failures because that's really deeply unfair, but surgery for them was not successful in reaching their weight goals or continuing them long term. They have all since regained back to unhealthy levels. But every single one of them gave me the first advice, which was be prepared to change absolutely everything, or don't do it because you'll regret it in 6 weeks.
Wow. That's good advice. That's good advice. And that's because this is a tool. It's not an absolute solution. And a lot of people go about it and jump in believing they could still do what they want.
I think that was my biggest saving grace was when I, so for me, when the doctor started suggesting it, my primary started suggesting it, I started to kind of do the research. I approached my spouse because this is a big decision. And we sat down and we talked about every Weight Watchers, diet pill, wrap, Beachbody, I mean, you name it, the trainer. And he had absolutely, the problem wasn't the investment to him. He had already made the investment 1,000 times and he told me, I'll invest 1,000 more to keep you alive. I just want you here. He's like, but we
That's tried. Love. That's a keeper. That's a keeper. Oh, yeah,
his biggest concern was just after hearing all this news, his biggest concern was he just wanted me here past 40.
Wow.
And he wanted us to have kids and still continue life and enjoy it. You know, my quality of life had sunk quite a bit over the course of our marriage, especially the last 3 years.
I can imagine.
Health had. And yeah. It had, you know, he had just watched it. So for him, he was like, hey, you've tried everything else. Let's at least look at it. And honestly, when you compare it to everything I've put my body through before, in some ways, this is actually easier. I've done the grapefruit diet, cottage cheese diet, all the pills on the market. I was 16 begging older people to buy me stackers in front of GNC because I was, you know, of course, I think most of us listening, if only I was as fat now as I was, thought I was back then. But I fought with obesity probably from about puberty. That's the first time doctors started talking to my parents about my weight. And it, the more we tried to shame it out of me and the more we approached it as a problem, the more I did it and the more I ate more and I hit it and the more it became an issue.
That is so powerful. Wow.
That is very powerful. And then to have been struggling with that for so long, because that takes us back to puberty and, you know, your weight loss journey before the regain and then ultimately before surgery, which was still a lot of years of struggle.
Well, and I had to get over the stigma of surgery, of it being, I even kind of approach it as like this new cool diet that was like, but surgical. And I even, at first I looked at the balloon or the, what was the other one that was
big? Bypass.
The band.
And
These are temporary ones, the balloon, the band. Uh-huh. Bypass I did look at, but I secretly didn't want to move my organs if I could help it. I know it's a weird thing, but.
It's not weird. It's totally understandable.
And it makes me feel better that there's another stronger tool. It
always, yes.
Like, instead of jumping for the bazooka, I kind of went for the pistol just to see how I do. And I figured if I needed a secondary stage, I could always do that later. Whereas if I went for the big bazooka, I necessarily
not, couldn't. Yeah, you can't go back and there's no really going forward. And that's exactly Dr. Appel's mentality on that as well.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, and we had a big conversation about that as well. I was pretty set on the sleeve, but he kind of confirmed it for me. But the biggest thing is if you go in knowing this isn't a diet, this isn't a pill, this isn't a wrap, this isn't something you'll ever take back. It will absolutely change everything about how you perceive food and how you eat and how you interact with society and everything you think it's going to be and nothing like you think it's going to be. And if you don't research, you will regret it deeply because you cannot undo it. And I sound like a gatekeeper, like I don't want people to get surgery, but the reality is I want people to get surgery. I want the right people to get surgery.
Absolutely. I want them to be well informed.
Absolutely horrified when I get messages from people who have had surgery recently or are thinking of surgery and they have obviously
didn't do the research.
They're asking for advice that they shouldn't be asking for in my mind. Like, or at least why don't they have somebody that they are asking, like somebody professionally that goes well beyond my scope of experience.
Fiona, give me an example of like what you're saying someone would ask you that's concerning that makes you realize they have not done their research.
First of all, if you message me on Instagram, I'm very friendly, but if you send me a message and you ask me, what is the sleeve? I'm going to send you a link to Google.
Yeah, you should. As you should. It's not your job to. There's so much literature out there and so many tools.
I get that one a lot though, where people go, "What's the VSG or what is a sleeve?" And I'm kind of a smartass. I send them a link to Google, because that you know if you ask me what kind of surgery should I get, sir, ma'am, there is not an MD in my name at all. Please do not ask me. I can, if you have a personal question, like what was your experience with this tool, I can absolutely tell you, but I cannot tell you what's right for you.
Good. And I love that you approach it in that way as well, because some people don't, and what their experience and what their journey is, the assumption is this is what everybody else would go through as well.
Absolutely not. I get a lot of dietary questions too, sometimes that concern me, like how many grams of protein should I be eating? Should I be taking vitamins? And I'm shocked that a lot of people, especially unfortunately, if they went out of country, they don't always have a lot of follow-up support. So then they start reaching out within the community. And the community, especially on Instagram, is beautiful. The VSG and weight loss community, I have met some of my great friends. I've had some amazing, my journey has been on there. It's been an amazing platform for that. But also all of us are just former patients or current patients. Exactly. So asking us advice is well-meaning, and I do always give the advice that I have to the fullest intent of being well-meaning, but I often am worried that you shouldn't be asking each other, because again, it's kind of the blind leading the blind, and some people do things in their diet that I absolutely would not do, and I probably do things in my diet or the way I do things that people would be absolutely horrified to do. So it's, that's what kind of worries me the most, is when you start, or if they don't like the answer they're getting from their professionals, they turn to the community to override exactly. it.
And everybody's different.
Really dangerous.
Yes, absolutely. Everybody's different. And I tell this to every patient as well, leading up before surgery, that you cannot compare yourself to anybody else. And this is where the community and the forums and things like that can be dangerous because that's why we also do the metabolic test and to see where you're at and what your journey was beforehand, because it all affects how you are right at that moment. You know, I always say that your metabolism is a reflection of your lifestyle leading up to now. Okay. And if you are somebody who was very sedentary, didn't do much, it's not going to be as effective as somebody who is extremely active and just that just ate a lot, who's maybe, you know, does construction lifts and their metabolism would be so much higher. So when they cut it down, it would be a lot quicker in terms of weight loss.
Well, and I think it's hard for people to, I don't know your guys' personal journey, if either of you ever been like morbidly obese.
Overweight, not morbidly obese. Overweight.
I have not, but I have struggled with addiction for basically my whole life.
So see, you have kind of, you understand the mental addiction, that aspect of it. The overweight, you kind of, and the health fitness side a little bit. But again, it's, I don't want to say it, it's not with malice when I say that people, if you haven't or aren't morbidly obese, you do not get it. You do not get living in it, being trapped in it, how difficult the small things like people talk about. I used to get well-meaning advice all the time. Just get up and go.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when I first started at 375 with my trainer, we spent the first session just standing up and sitting down, and she told me great job and sent me home. We had a lot to do. I had a lot of muscle imbalances. I had a lot of, my joints could not take the impact of a lot of things. So when people tell me go running, and then I would go, and then I would ice my knees for 2 days.
Not that simple.
I wouldn't understand why it didn't work for me. What was I doing wrong? Why couldn't I just, you know? And I think it's also a self-defeating pattern though, because the more I failed to launch and all of that, the more defeated I come and the less I'd even try.
Yes, yes.
So it becomes that never-ending cycle. But I think the biggest part, and I hope everyone, even just one person online hears me on this, is that it, regardless of how you get out, tool or no tool, weight loss or no weight loss, you can get out of obesity. And when you do, it will be everything and nothing like you think it's going to be. And it's absolutely worth it. But you have to pay the price for it, which is you're going to have to change who you are. Who you are now is obese. Say goodbye to them.
Yeah.
Because if you stay the same person, you'll stay obese. Or you'll go back to being. You'll yo-yo.
Yeah.
That's what always happened to me.
Exactly.
You made such a good point, Fiona, right now, but also earlier in the conversation, again, hitting on the fact that nothing's going to be the same after surgery, and you need to be willing and ready to change so many things and all of the things. Now, let me ask you this, as far as your relationship with food, and we've spoke about this before, I'd love you to touch on it. Talk to us about the importance of really digging into your relationship with food, like the first, you know, immediately post-op up until 2, 3, 4 weeks post-op?
Well, for me, it started actually the night before. So the night before surgery, I cried all night. Not because I was necessarily, people always assume it was fear or that I was regretting it or didn't want to go through with it. Actually, I cried because I kind of needed to apologize to myself for needing to take it this far.
Mm.
You know, like it, I had to do something this drastic to save myself, but also because I loved myself and I loved my life enough to want to live it.
Exactly.
I was done. And so I went in and I immediately, you know, I knew about the stages of recovery for food, of course, the liquids and all of that. I went in and when I woke up, honestly, it was very uncomfortable, but once I calmed down a little bit, my first thought was, I'm going to use this as a chance to break this cycle with food. So I went in and was like, I'm going to retrain. Everything I've done has obviously been wrong. If it worked, I wouldn't be here.
Mm-hmm.
So I woke up, and when they told me once an hour, you can ask the hotel security camera, I was up once an hour walking. I was dead tired for that hydration, but I was the only one not still dying because I got up and walked.
I love that. I love that.
But I took it, and I think the nurses kind of grinned at me because they could tell, like, I was down for it. This was it. I went home, and I followed to the T in my book. I measured everything. I tracked before, but I tracked even then with Berrytastic at first because my Fitness Pal doesn't, the low, low calories on my Fitness Pal really throw it off. Understandably, a normal human being eating 300 calories for a few weeks would be really scary. I completely retrained my tongue. I tried new foods. I personally do not recommend baby food.
You just said you retrained your tongue?
Yeah, I completely broke. I decided that I was going to retry all the foods again, and foods that I knew from before that I didn't necessarily need to eat, I really didn't allow back. I just, why? Why did I need to rush back and go back to, like, I knew I loved cheese. It took me months to put cheese back into my diet, partly because I was scared, and it turns out I am lactose sensitive after surgery, but also because I love it so much that I was like, I can live without it for a minute. I really, really, really like cheese, and if I'm in such a rush to eat it that I want it to be the first food I eat, honestly, I chose refried peas.
Yeah. Well, because you identified that might be a negative relationship.
I have trigger foods.
It's healthy.
I have trigger foods, absolutely. Like, I adore pizza, but I am very, very careful with pizza. And I'm very careful that when I do eat pizza, I tend to make it at home. And I tend to make, like, the little pitas, or I'll make, like, a chicken breast one. Because I know that if you set a large in front of me, my old brain will try to kick back on. And I won't get through it, but I'll get through more than I needed to, and it doesn't feel good. One, when they first get the sleeve, the first time you push your tool, you will not forget it. And maybe I'm a lucky person. Pain aversion apparently works for me. The first time I spent 30 minutes, not to be graphic, but retching over a toilet because I decided to eat, it was applesauce. I ate one too many bites of applesauce too fast in my healing stage, and it was terribly uncomfortable. And after that, I learned to measure not only my this would have probably been, I want to say I was probably about 4 weeks out, 5, because I was into applesauce. I was eating in front of the TV, which you
there
shouldn't
you go.
Do.
Another trigger, another routine that gets us there. And those are, again, one of those things that you need to change about your lifestyle, that you
mindful.
Know.
We eat at the table every night. My friends think we're kind of strange, but we actually started eating at the table and we've never gone back. We don't turn the TV on. We actually turn it off because I've noticed if the TV's on, I'll overeat. I am with the applesauce too. I was being lazy. I was eating it out of the jug with a spoon because I figured, oh, my sleeve, I won't overeat. I learned that day that to this day, and I still do this almost 16 months out. I actually measure everything. So I measure my portions for tracking, but I also make sure to keep my plate within a certain weight. Like, I don't walk away with a plate that weighs 8 ounces because I know if I do, I'm going to kind of pick at it and try to eat that much. So I try to keep the whole plate's weight down to like 3-4 ounces because I can always go back for more, everyone. That's a big thing. You can always go back for more. You can't take it back out.
Good. I like that. No, that's awesome. People want to hear that as well because, and some people who've had this procedure have completely different scenarios, mm-hmm. are able to tolerate more earlier, you know, and things like that.
And then sometimes they say, I can tolerate this and that, Did you not take enough stomach out?
Yeah.
I don't think it's, I think I'm one of those people that it's not working for. And the thing, again, back to this being a mental game.
Why did you bring it back? That's what I tell people. They're like, oh no, ice cream doesn't reject. And I was like, well, why did you choose to eat ice cream 5 months post-op?
And then they look at me
like I'm a jerk, because I kind of am being a jerk. But if we're being brutally honest, that's the conversation you have to have with yourself.
Exactly.
So when I retched for 30 minutes over the applesauce, I walked away and said, what did I learn? Not in front of the TV anymore. I need to measure my portions. Even this early out, I need to learn this. And guess what? I didn't have another incident for months. I didn't have another incident until my birthday. I was eating cake and I knew as I was eating the bite that I was pushing it, but I still went for the second one and I suffered. I had to walk in the parking lot for like 15 minutes to get it to settle so that I could join the party again.
But you got through it. You learned. You were able to enjoy, and then again, it was another learning experience.
I think I remember you actually mentioning something about that on your Instagram. And again, that is what I just love so much about following your journey, because a lot of times on Instagram and, you know, Facebook or social media in general, people, you can control what you put out about yourself. And is it easy to say, I'm perfect, look at me, I'm successful because I've done everything perfect? And it's like, no, that's not realistic.
The accounts that inspired me to get surgery and the people who actually weight loss people who didn't even necessarily even have surgery, some of them have been successful without it. All of them, I noticed a trend, were willing to show, there is a certain parts of yourself you don't want to show to the world and to online. That's none of their business, but you know, are willing to show a little bit more of their human side. So I made it a determination that so many accounts I saw though were all about how they had surgery and they were the holy grail of perfect all the time. And they lost 200 pounds in 3 months. And I decided not to be like that. I posted when I bawled at my 12-week mark because I still wasn't under 200 pounds. I look back now and I just want to like forehead kick myself. But I actually cried on my 12-week mark because I still wasn't under 200 pounds. I went into surgery at 269. And for some reason, I had it in my head that I was going to lose 70 pounds in 12 weeks. Guess what? I didn't, but I also lost 8 pant sizes.
Yeah.
Wow. And where a lot of people do get defeated at that 3 month mark, and then your brain kicks in and starts telling you you're a failure. You did all this for no reason. And a lot of people at that point, you're at a fork in the road. You have two choices: to say, you know what, it didn't work for me. I'm 3 months in. I thought I was going to lose 70 pounds. Or like you did, and say, nope, I still have goals. I'm determined to meet those goals. And this is not a roadblock. It's just, you know, or a setback. It's part of your journey and you have to keep pushing forward.
Well, and I like to tell the story of the 6 month mark. I was in a group with other people that we all went through different people, but we all had surgery in February of 2019. We all had the sleeve. At around the 6 month mark, several of us went back to old habits. Some of us didn't. And a big part of that was people who 6 month mark, there's a huge stall for anybody who, Alex is already nodding because he knows the 6 month stall, when everyone panics. And I think I even emailed you at 6 months going, ah! Because the 6 month stall kicked in and I stalled out for about 5 weeks. I thought that I had just like ruined everything. It was over. And in those 5 weeks though, half of us decided that we were going to double down and just, you know, keep going the track and we'll make it. Listen to our nutritionist. It's going to be okay. Just keep on track. And the other half started to kind of go back, well, if this is what they're going to get, this is what they're going to get. And the half of us that just kind of stayed the track have all made weight goal or very, very close. And those who didn't have all stalled and stopped at 6 months.
Yeah, you push forward. And that's one thing I express so much during the consultation is that you have resources. Okay, utilize these resources. We are here for you. If you have questions, reach out. And you did. You know, I don't recall what I said to you, but hopefully it was at least some part to help you.
You actually, if you don't remember, I sent you a novel at my 6 month mark about all the things, how I wasn't moving. It had been 3 weeks and you literally just sent me back the paragraph. I looked over your Berrytastic. You are doing beautifully. Hold fast. It's just a stall. And you said, give it 3 more weeks and call me or write me if it doesn't break by then. And it literally broke like 2.5 weeks into the 3 weeks of waiting to call you back.
Wow.
You were right. It was just an adjustment. And looking at the pictures around that time, you can see an obvious shift in body as well. And around the 6 month mark, I also started exercising more because I finally shed enough weight to really start to enjoy and regularly exercise. Mm-hmm. So I think also that's part of why I stalled, that I wasn't realizing was I was shifting gears, and the scale isn't going to show that.
Yeah, of course. And that's why I say too, that all success isn't measured on the scale. This is a journey that you are losing a lot of weight in a very short amount of time, whether you believe it or not, whether you find it successful or not, but your resources are limited in terms of what you put in your body, water, nutrients, and then the output is there. You have to, something is going to give a little bit. And the fact that you are upset that you haven't lost in a short amount of time, look at how far you've come in 6 months, and realize that, where did all of that go?
My favorite posting is, I'm X amount of weeks, when they're still counting weeks, so you know it's good. I'm X amount of weeks, and I've only lost 50 pounds, 40 pounds, 30, whatever it is. And you always do the math in your head, and you're just like, when did you, I've said this to several people, and again, people think I'm a jerk, but I mean it well. I mean it in a loving way. When's the last time you lost 50 pounds in 6 weeks?
Exactly.
And think about putting on 50 pounds in 6 weeks.
Yeah.
That would be insane.
Yeah.
People get impatient, and I don't blame them. And I did the same thing. I have several times been told by Blossom staff, it's all good. Just hang on. Slow and steady. You didn't gain it overnight. You're not going to lose it overnight. And it really does sometimes feel like a really cruel waiting game. But I always end up telling people the same thing too. It's going to go by faster than you think. Just take pictures and hold on. It will come.
Yeah, take some measurements, things like that as well.
Then when you're bigger, I feel like the first initial doesn't show as much. Like, I feel like I was about 200 pounds. I went from 269 to about 200 pounds before people in my life really started saying like, hey, what's up? So it took about 60 pounds before people really started to approach me and say that they noticed. But when I started getting under the 200s, though, every time I'd lose like 5-10 pounds, people would be like, whoa, you look different. Yeah. So I tell people too that you kind of have to wait to catch up to your own loss. If you start at 400 pounds and you get to 200 pounds, you will not look like someone who's 110 pounds, but stop for a minute and realize that you've lost 200 excess pounds.
How far you come. Yeah.
And one of the things too that people don't realize for non-scale victories would be, when I say measure, check, feel how your pants fit, check out the notch on your belt, or that's the only thing that they measure. It's like, well, no, I've only lost, 3 inches. Like, what did you measure your arms and your legs and your calves and your neck? Actually, it's about probably 20 inches, you didn't realize. And you've come so far. I also use this metaphor that if you were to take 50 pounds, put it 50 pounds of fat, put it in a pot and put it on a stove, how long do you think it would take to burn out? A long time. And your body is not as efficient as fire to burn that off.
I feel like people didn't talk about too the awkward weight loss phases you go through. Like, I went through a period of time where I was extremely pear-shaped, almost like noticeably so, which I had never really been before. And it was just the way my upper body decided to melt off first. And then eventually my bottom has, I'm much more even now, but there was a period of time where I was thinking, oh no, what is going on? And you don't get to pick where it comes from. I'm going to tell everyone right now, it's not going to come from your least favorite part of your body. Wherever you have an issue is where it's going to come from the last, because it's the cruel irony of our bodies. I get asked a lot about extra skin. I have some pictures on Instagram. I do have a lot. I tell people for when they ask about how much, like, I wear about a size 8 in jeans over the skin. I wear about a size 4 under the skin.
Wow, that's
big. I have a decent amount of skin. It's all for me. I'm one of those lucky, unlucky people that it all seems, because of how I carried my weight and how I carried my obesity and when I got obese, I think all my weight tended to be on the chest stomach area. So it's very easy for me to hide my skin. I have a lot of it. It's just in one spot. So it's easier for me to kind of manipulate. I didn't get a lot of the arms and legs. I think part of that's also I'm younger and also how I carried my weight. I was never a big arm or leg person.
Right.
Even then though, even with that much skin, and I'm going to get this message at least 15 more times because I've already had 5 today on Instagram. Yes, it is worth it. I have 6 feet of skin. It is worth, not literally 6 feet. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of extra skin. It is worth it. It is uncomfortable. It claps when you run. My dog has stepped on it. I've punched it. My husband's pinched it. It's there. It gets in the way. It does mess with the body dysmorphia. It makes the mirror very tricky sometimes. It can be frustrating to feel tiny clothed and big naked. I feel like it's something people don't talk about is when you're clothed, everything's kind of smoothed out and compressed and you can really see how small you are, but then naked, all of the ripples and folds show and it makes you look big again. And I think it's taboo to talk about because people don't like to talk about any of the negatives of surgery. I feel like if they do, they feel like they're bashing the surgery, mm-hmm. where that's not the case. It's just the realities of it.
It's the reality. It's the truth. It's the struggles, but it's also still saved your life. And would it be worth it? Is it worth it to you to save your life? The fibromyalgia, the pain, the diabetes, all of those things compared to where you're at right now.
Oh, absolutely. I only wish I had been ready sooner. I should put it that way. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I had gotten it. Honestly, if I had gotten it in my 20s, I probably would have wasted it and would have ruined it or hurt myself doing behaviors that I shouldn't have done. You have to be psychologically ready. And I stressed this over and over and over. And I did, I even scared the poor bejesus out of a couple of my close family members and friends who followed me. Well, not me. They got surgery after me. I did the same speech to all of them and just terrified them and told them all the ugly and the bad and the bowel movements and the throwing up and the hair loss and all of it. And they still went through it. And every single one of them went, but you're the only one who warned us about the mental part.
Yes. And that's a big, that's a strong one. I'm glad we're talking about it right now and actually hearing your journey and your struggles through that. What are your plans right now? What are your plans moving forward in terms of the skin?
So for the skin, because we're trying for children, I don't see a point in removing it now. And most of the plastic surgeons I've talked to recommend doing it after children anyway, just because why bang the dents out of the car just to put it in a derby?
I like that.
You know, so I kind of tease my husband that he's very lucky that he gets a brand new wife times three because he's gonna get version one, have kids, and then have another version. I told him my ruthless goal is my 40th birthday. I really want a belly button by the time I'm or belly button ring by the time I'm by my 40th birthday, because when I was a teenager, I secretly always wanted one but was too scared. And in the 90s, belly button or thousands, belly button rings were very, very hot.
Yeah.
It will probably be about 3-4 years before I can remove it all. If I had my way, I'd probably have chest, stomach, and probably a little bit of arm and upper leg work. In all honesty, if I can only get one thing done, it would be the, I don't know what area they call it, like the belt, lower stomach, spare tire areas.
What's where the abdomen area?
Yeah, it's kind of the mommy tummy tuck area that everyone kind of talks about. That will never go back. If one more person tells me that, if I try this diet, guys, this wrap, that pill, that vitamin, that diet will not get rid of 6 inches of spare skin.
True.
Also, be wary of after surgery. I get this all the time. Oh, surgery really works. You should try MLM brand here. This shake, this vitamin supplement, this diet pill, this wrap. You do not need magical vitamins. You do not need magical wraps. You do not need magical shakes. And in fact, half of them, if you look at them, you probably shouldn't be drinking after surgery anyway. Like, why do you need dried fruit powder?
Yeah, exactly.
No, you need a protein shake. But be wary that they come out of the woodwork, or watch your pictures. I've had lots of people, even I know, try to claim that I've used their products for weight loss.
Wow. Yeah.
I've got several, especially home direct sale brands, try to use like people from my life, from high school and things, use my pictures. It's not true. If you ever see it, I didn't use anything else. There is no shortcut either, people. Stop. You don't need, and I did this one. We did this one over and over because I used keto to a lot of success before. And I tell people all the time that I don't mean to bash keto all the way because it did work very well for me before. But number one, you don't need the keto product, the powder, the bars. No, you're just, they're candy bars that you're supplementing with.
I do say that all the time. And I agree. And it's just so heavily marketed and so prominent right now. It's such a big fad.
Keto done wrong will make you sick. Yes. I know, because I've done keto wrong and I've also done keto correctly. If you think keto is a brick of cheese and bacon, you're going to get sick. If you I mean, don't get me wrong, I like cheese and bacon, but you also need to be eating asparagus and your greens and your salmon.
Yes, yes. So what we preach is,
stop trying to convince people that keto did it or veganism did it or any of it. I guess everyone's diet after surgery is going to look how it's going to look, especially long term. But I'm just a huge believer that if your nutritionist does not recommend it in your first year, stop trying to shortcut it. It will not make it faster. It's not going to make it better. It's not going to give you better results. It's truth.
I love that. I love that. I do want to clarify just for the listeners that we do preach protein and vegetables. Okay. And a keto diet is a 4-to-1 ratio of fat versus protein and carbohydrates, primarily fat. But when you have a restricted space and stomach and very low calories and you use whole foods, then very low calories, then the primary becomes amino acids and protein to sustain your metabolism, to prevent muscle breakdown for energy, and it's not going to be fat. Okay, so that is where the difference is and why you shouldn't, or at least listen to what we're saying and listen to Fiona's testimony as well.
And I actually did try it a little bit near the end, right around the year mark. I tried to go back into keto a little bit just because I had stalled out. I immediately gained about 6 pounds. I started feeling sick. It messed with my stomach, TMI. I don't know why, but it didn't work. But I will admit that even to this day, though, I will pull healthier recipes from paleo, from Whole30, from keto. Those are sometimes some great dinner recipes, especially feeding other people. So, you know, the macros work out with my smaller amounts just fine. So I don't want to say that I never use it. It's just, yeah, like I preach, it's not gonna shortcut. It's not gonna help. Your body doesn't necessarily respond the same way it used to. And again, if those diets work, then why didn't they work for you before?
Exactly.
Fiona, you mentioned that you, in the beginning, you were very diligent about tracking and very tastic. Mm-hmm. 16 months out at this point, do you still track?
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about why you still track and what you've noticed about tracking.
So for me, after surgery, a lot of people shoot to learn moderation after surgery, and I applaud them. That is a brilliant move if that's what's right for you. I am a very type A, black and white person. I know this about myself. I don't do moderation well. So when I first left surgery, I was extremely, lay down. I was very, sorry, my dog. I was very diligent about following the plan and things like that and hitting goal. As I got closer to goal, I still am very diligent. And I would say 80% of my diet is on point and on track. 20% is honestly enjoyed. Let's just put it that way. And also I work out enough too to know, and my work is very physical, so I can balance these things out. But I do know that the few times that I've started to slack and not be honest with myself and not track, I start to slide more into foods and more into portions and things that I don't need to be eating. And I am especially guilty of, if it was up to me, I would live on nothing but coffee and protein shakes because I'm lazy.
And Halo Top ice cream, you just forgot.
Yeah, my Halo Top, I know. See, there's my 20% showing up right there. And as she says, as I ate a crab puff earlier. So it's, you know, it is all about, there is moderation to be had, but I still track it. I am very honest. On my Instagram, I talk about sometimes I have binge days or I nibble. I call them my nibble binges, where I'll nibble all day and not drink my water and eat. And I even track those because I just want to be honest with myself and know where I'm at. And the more I do that, the more I don't beat myself up as well. I think I've managed to actually create a healthier relationship with food over tracking. I know this isn't the case for everyone. So I do know that it's kind of a case-by-case basis if tracking is really right for that person. I, 99% of the time, though, if you write me and you say, hey, I'm X amount and I'm kind of stuck, the first thing I'm going to say is, what does your tracker say you've been doing this week?
There you go. I like that. It's also a level of accountability to let you know.
I also switched gears. My first year, I was very, very diligent about daily goals. After the first year, I started switching to weekly goals because I look more to sit in my ranges. I also switched back to MyFitnessPal. I actually use both, but like with the MyFitnessPal, I kind of like their weekly breakdown, so I put it in there. And I shoot more for, is my weekly within my average? Is my weekly, the protein I always hit every day, but you know, I just kind of shoot more for that relaxed, am I hitting my weekly? Because at the end of every week, if I'm hitting my weekly within the ranges, I should be good to go. And that means I allow myself some moderation as well as knowing that I'm still doing most of what I should be.
Exactly. Because people ask all the time, like, oh, will I never be able to eat this? Or will I never be able to eat that? It's like, no, we want it very strict because we want to get you to a level that you want to be at, but also change your relationship with food and have an understanding of what's going to get you there.
Stop rewarding yourself with food.
Yes.
Stop rewarding yourself with food right now. I'm guilty of it. I still catch myself doing it. If I'm not careful, I'll be like, I had such a great day at the gym today. Let's go get some ice. Wait, why?
Yeah, I shouldn't be doing that. This is...
My that goes boss, along with the mental aspect of it all.
My boss rode my ass all day today. I am exhausted. I don't feel like going home and cooking chicken. I should go to Taco Bell. Wait, why?
Yeah.
Chicken's literally in the fridge. If you want to go, you know, you have to watch. And after your first year, the honeymoon really burns off. And that's when the long term kicks in. And that's where, again, you're not going to be strict crazy forever. Realistically, you're not. I did it for 11 months. It was great. But after a while, it also got in the way. My first 11 months, I dedicated myself to the point that I was the spoil sport who brought food to parties for herself. I went, Jim, you could clock on a Monday at 4 p.m. I was at the gym. You knew where I was. And while I needed that, and I do recommend people do that as long as they can, I also do recognize that at the end of there is light at the end of the tunnel. Do your year. Like I always kind of tell people, do the hard time. Do your year like a prison sentence. Just race through, change yourself, go to therapy, weigh your food, go to the gym, explore new things, change your mindset. And then if you still want to reintroduce the Whopper on your year mark after surgery because you've just been dying for it, have one. Guarantee it doesn't taste as good as you thought it did.
Yeah, exactly. It's not gonna be that satisfaction that you once had or what you thought it was gonna be.
I can't stand a lot of the foods I used to love. It's kind of funny, you know, when you get to a healthier weight, you're like, oh, I can have a Dorito again. I'm gonna try one. To me, it tastes like powdered chemicals. I can't even do it.
Another thing about weighing and actually staying on track for that first year or even the first 6 months, it really sets the tone for habits and understanding and at least knowing within a very small margin of error that you can tolerate this or this is what has been working for me. So when you see something that is really out of proportion, you can identify it because you weighed so much or you've been accountable and you know exactly where that's at.
And Blossom is going to give you the tools to fight your obesity, but it cannot fight the battle for you. It will give you the surgery tool. It will give you a nutritionist tool. It'll give you community tools. It will give you, without the surgery, I never could have reset my relationship with food to this extreme. And not everyone will approach surgery the same as me. Not everyone will even agree with the way I kind of try to explain my mentality behind it. But for me, as much as I needed you and I needed your guidance and I needed the book and I needed to know what to do and to admit that if I knew how to eat properly, I wouldn't have gotten here in the first place. And to admit that I don't know better. If I knew better, I wouldn't be seeking help. You know, it's kind of like you talk about with control of your addiction. Food is an addiction except for we need it. You have to survive. You have to eat.
And it's so accessible.
Exactly. And it is so rooted in society. Oh, you think you know until you're 6 weeks into surgery and you're still pathetically eating, I guess you can call it. You know, I remember being frustrated because a 12-ounce Premier protein shake would take me an hour of like really concentrating on it to get it down. And that's when you start getting, I call it the grumpy phase. And a lot of people don't always like to talk about this. So the hormones spike because you're losing a ton of fat. So that already makes you kind of PMS-y, I guess, for lack of a better term. But also you're feeling a lot better. Your energy level's great. You're starting to show off. You're starting to lose weight. But also the changes start to set in. And then you start noticing, why is everything around food? I used to tell my husband that all the time. I would get mad. Why is every time anybody wants to see me, it has to involve food? I would get mad at food because I just was tired of seeing it, tired of thinking about it. I got through this phase where I thought it was this horrible irony. I got surgery to control my relationship with food and to eat less food, I thought. And then in this horrible irony, my life revolved around nutrition and food. And people don't talk about that phase. It's almost like a buyer's regret, where you go through this phase where you're like, these changes are uncomfortable and my relationship with food is different and I can't self-soothe anymore. And but yet I don't feel like I'm losing fast enough, but I'm also
just in your head.
It all comes crashing because the high starts to wear off, the post-surgery high, I call it, because just like a newborn baby, you come home from surgery and you're like, look, everyone, it's perfect. Everything's perfect. And of course it is.
Yes.
Truth.
Exactly. And I tell people,
see,
too.
One more post about people trying to eat post-op. That is my personal pet peeve. If you are a week out, why are you trying to eat solids?
Yeah, solids are.
I got another one on Facebook today that they were like, they're like, oh, I saw your old post about your refried beans, blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm a week and a half out. You think? And all I said was, what does your nutritionist say? Well, the Blossom book says that I should be. And I said, well, that's probably a good idea. You should call Alex. And she's, if you have any more questions, she's like, oh, okay. I don't know if she ever called you. So if you got a phone call about beans, you know why.
Okay. Yeah. They come about, they come about.
But, you know, it's people. That's the mentality. That's where I always try to stress people. That's the thought that you have to break. That thought right there that made you reach out to me a week and a half after surgery when it's dangerous to eat. Ask me permission to eat. You're asking me permission because the addiction in your head's talking.
Yeah, and it's trying to get justified.
Trying to justify and you want permission and I won't give it to you. And also you need to address that with yourself because long-term you're the only one who can stop. And I still fall for it. I'm guilty of it. I still, you know, I still get my little impulses and urges and we all do. But if you don't catch it early and start to work on it, you're going to write Alex and say, well, I only eat 1,000 calories a day, but it's all Taco Bell and I don't understand why I don't feel good.
And we'll talk about it too. But hey, let's rewind a little bit. You were talking about your journey on how you found Blossom.
Yes.
Okay. Some of the steps you went through, some of the people or some of the places that you were deciding to go to.
Yeah, I did a lot of research, but I decided surgery was right for me. We'll fast forward. Decided surgery was right for me. I started researching. My insurance and my husband's insurance at the time did not cover bariatric at all. So we did have insurance for US-based folks. I started researching local and decided that $40,000 was just not going to be something I could afford. Uh-huh. And so, of course, the next step that came up was people, as you search online for affordable surgery, you stumble across Mexico was the number one. And that's actually where I actually went as far as booking. I had the date set. I had a coordinator. It was set for 3 weeks after my first phone call. Just a heads up, because there's a point to that later. And my husband threw an absolute fit. He said he would rather mortgage against the car and pay for surgery for $40,000 here than go to Mexico. He absolutely would not hear it. I actually got very, very lucky because there was a group of us that were supposed to go that met online. My group that went all ended up getting infections directly after surgery in their staples.
Really?
They all tested positive for MRSA.
Holy crap.
Wow. And one of the girls ended up getting drained. She was okay, but she ended up having to have some drainage done because it started to get in her muscle. So it turned out to be a blessing in disguise, but I was very upset, of course, because I mean, 3 weeks out, I was ready to pack my bags and go. And I felt really destroyed. And I went onto one of the big Facebook groups and kind of said, my husband absolutely said no, and I don't know what to do. And I don't want to put myself in this kind of debt. And I just got a gentle message that said, you don't have to go to Mexico. I went to Las Vegas. Nobody really knows about them. Here's the link. And I did a lot of research and I called. And I actually set the first time I called, they actually sent me back to your website to do more research.
Oh, nice.
Because I started asking questions about the safe sleeve and they pretty much just sent me the link back to the website and had me research it. But it did. I ended up, I believe the second phone call is when I booked, and I did book it quite a ways out because I fully self-paid. So for people who are curious, it did, I believe all in all, when I did the math, including time missed, pills, I paid for my mom went with me, I paid for her flight as well as her accommodations and food. All in all, my surgery cost me about $11,000. I don't remember directly how much of that is to Blossom directly. I want to say about 7 of it, give or take. And it absolutely, I know that sounds like an astronomical number, but I was quoted 9,500 for Mexico, not including flights or accommodations. And so it was pretty comparable and close. And good news is I didn't get any infections. And also for those who are looking that do have insurance like me, I found out by calling my insurance, if there was any complications in Mexico, like a staph infection or a striction or something like that, they could actually deny any medical coverage related to the surgery because I left the country to go get it done. So at least if something worse comes to worse, if I had had a complication with Blossom, I knew too that everything had been covered because I went to a U.S. facility and it was approved through the U.S.
Yeah, absolutely. What you're saying, Fiona, is so common because people are so desperate and they've exhausted all options. And like you said, if you were to go self-pay, you're 30, 40, 50 grand in some places here in the U.S. Or if you want to use your in-network benefits, you're going to wait sometimes 6-9 months. And there's so many hoops to jump through that, you know, either you're too big and you have to lose weight, but you can't lose too much weight, or you're not sick enough because you don't have the comorbidities. And so the insurance is almost like they don't want people to get sick.
My cousin,
they want to keep them sick.
My cousin, for her insurance to cover hers, they wanted her to lose weight and she lost too much and they made her gain 6 pounds 3 weeks before surgery.
Isn't that sick? That is just so twisted.
Yeah, she was mad. She was on her pre-op diet. And then they told her she had to add a whole bunch of whole milk and stuff to it because she needed to gain weight.
Wow.
Oh, man. And that's damaging mentally as well. It can be damaging mentally.
I think people, again, if you've never been obese, people look at surgery as this cosmetic thing. And they do not understand the absolute medical importance. What losing 130 pounds has done to my body in the last 16 months is absolutely medically speaking, I'm sure my primary care doctor goes on and on about it. She's never had a bariatric patient before and she's over the moon.
Awesome. I love that.
You know, it's just more than that I know insurance companies don't think of. So if you want to look at it from an insurance point of view, let's look at it. I now am no longer at risk for diabetes. I'm no longer at risk for blood pressure. My fibromyalgia has completely calmed down. I'm no longer seeing a pain specialist. My pregnancy will no longer be as risky. I mean, I'm saving them hundreds of thousands in my lifetime.
Absolutely. But they don't look at it like that, which is
Or people look at it as cosmetic. Even the people in my life, they understood that the weight was dangerous and they loved me and they wanted me to be healthy. But there's still this kind of undertone that there's a cosmetic.
Yeah. They don't have a struggle. They don't get it. They don't know what it took and what you've had to go through beforehand as well.
I think it helps explaining to my friends and family. The best way I've explained it is, you know, a diabetic might need an insulin pump and a cancer patient might need an IV port. I need some restriction and aid in my digestive system to beat obesity because at this point it is literally a disease. I do not have 20 pounds of vanity weight to lose. My husband's lost, over the time we've been married, give or take about 60 pounds. Kind of come and goes. He's one of those lucky ones that if he pays attention, he loses quick. And if he doesn't, he gains quick. But even he doesn't understand 60 pounds is not to be cocky. 60 pounds is not 230 pounds. You have absolutely no idea what I've been like. Even if you're like me and you're not unhealthy, you know, my insurance looked at it as, well, you're not diabetic yet. You're not high blood pressure yet. You haven't had a heart attack yet. You haven't had a complicated pregnancy yet. But what they don't realize is I could feel it all coming. And anybody who's unhealthy into that point in their body, anybody who's listening to this now who hasn't had surgery yet, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You are sitting in your body and you know deep down you are encased in a time bomb that's killing you.
Yeah.
And you can't lose the weight fast enough on your own to even save yourself. Mm-hmm. And even if you can, we all know the statistics of regain. I'm one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I've actually was speaking to somebody today who did not know that they were diabetic or had fatty liver disease. And that it was actually brand new news that was, man, now it's a good thing that you actually deep down, just like you said, you knew something was, you were ticking time bomb or something was going to happen, but you didn't even realize.
When you're 30 and you ache like that, just sitting there. Anyone listening to this knows what I'm talking about. If they are obese, they know exactly what I'm talking about. If they quiet your mind, close your eyes for half a second, just feel your body, you ache in your pelvis, you ache in your spine, you ache in your shoulders, you shake in your knees, you ache because you're not supposed to be encapsulated like that. You don't sit right. You don't stand right. And I didn't even realize how wrong I used to sit and stand until there wasn't me to do that to. I still have to like remind myself to sit down correctly because I'll tuck my pelvis and things. Mm-hmm. And it's things I used to do because I had 200 pounds of excess when I sat down.
Yeah. Wow, we've covered some amazing topics today, and I feel like we could just go on and on.
Yes.
Oh, probably. Sorry, guys. Probably.
No, don't be sorry. This is what people need to know, and I just, like I said in the beginning, I just love how raw and honest you are about the good, the bad, and the ugly. And what I'd love to lead out with here, what I'd love to go with is, I want to just hear a couple of topics, a couple of tips from you, and I'm sure you get a lot of these questions on your Instagram. What would you tell someone who's considering this, who say they've actually done a fair amount of research and they know by maybe through a surgeon or a consultation that they know that the gastric sleeve's right for them? What would you tell them as far
just a
as
a couple tips?
Yeah.
Quick tips.
Quick tips is read the book, and then email Alex and then read the book again because it's probably in the book.
I love it.
The second one would be prepared to change even if it's uncomfortable. If you are prepared to change even if it's uncomfortable, this will absolutely save your life. And Blossom, I now know why when I went through surgery, everyone was so excited and cheering. And after surgery, you're kind of like, why? I got hit by a truck. Dr. Matt was right. I don't necessarily like him right now. And you know, you kind of think like, why is everyone so perky? Why is everyone acting like this is such a big deal? Ugh, whatever. And then I realize it's because I'm absolutely being reborn and changing my life, and I don't even know it yet. So if you're thinking about it, consider it. I'm on Instagram. There's lots of us out there. I absolutely cannot recommend Blossom enough. And I hope that, you know, Blossom knows how much it means to have a face on people who have really gone through it, because this is, I wish I had gotten more one-on-one and less clinical. Clinical's great. You know what you're in for. Know what the clinical numbers of weight loss are. Know what clinically is happening during your surgery. But I know, and I hope for others hearing this, it helps to know people who literally have lived it and are looking at it, not from a clinical point of view, but from, we're kicking obesity's ass with Blossom's help, and we can absolutely do it. We just need to be ready for it.
I love that.
Well said.
If people wanted to follow your journey, how can they do that again?
Oh, my best one is Instagram, which is Never Say Never Fiona, F as in Frank, I-O-N-A. That's the main platform. I do appreciate when people reach out to me on Facebook and things. If you happen to see me on there, that's great. But I tend to prefer all of my weight loss surgery stuff to be on Instagram if possible.
Perfect.
Never say never, Fiona. I love it. And she will never say never again.
Never. And hopefully soon we can hook up again. We'll talk more in depth about something, or hopefully I'll see you guys in person again for the photo shoot for everyone who's hit goal.
The goddess cannot wait. Yes.
And we can follow again. There's so many more topics. Like you said, we can talk on and on. There's some more taboo things that people don't speak on that you talk about on your journey. And we'd love to touch base on that at a later time.
Yep. But, absolutely. It Have a good night, amazing guys.
Talking with you, it was, we've gotten some awesome knowledge bombs and all of the good, the bad, the ugly.
As they say about Fiona, you might not always love what I have to say, but I'm usually right.
On that note, we will see you later and have a good day, have a good night, and keep crushing it.
You too, guys. Bye.
All right, Fiona. Bye-bye.
This was another episode of the Blossom Podcast. For more motivation and future episodes with Alex, make sure to subscribe so you don't miss out on any life-changing moments.